Perfect. Alrighty, welcome everyone to the second installment of Dirt and Democracy. This will be recorded, and bear with us. We'll be sending out all the recordings and as well as the resources from this series and the last one to you shortly. And just as a little refresher, this is a series with the Farm Force, and the goals of the series are to build community and lay the educational foundation for preserving democracy and using it in our organizing. And topics will include consensus, which we are going over today, and conflict transformation in social movements, going over examples of successes and failures in different organizing spaces globally, from India to Kenya, and the use of community spaces like the Grange, so that we're better educated as a community in resisting corporate land grabs and the commodification of land and ecosystem services here in Vermont. And the principles will be broadly applicable, but we want to mobilize them in our discussions for our community right here. We also have on-the-ground efforts to build a community base of support for farmers, help farmers farm essentially, and put this educational foundation into practice through different Farm Force events. So also stay tuned for those. But without further ado, I'm going to introduce Sarah Coffey. Sarah is a co-founder of the Midnight Special Law Collective and has helped foster autonomous organizer and frontline-led movement legal support for over 20 years. She has worked as an organizer and trainer with the National Lawyers Guild Mass Defense Committee and as a vice president of the NLG Legal Workers, the activist and organizer element of the NLG. She has helped coordinate defense of First Amendment protests from the WTO shutdown in Seattle in 1999 to Ferguson, Missouri Black Lives Matter protests in 2014, the South Carolina farm eviction resistance in LA in 2006, and more recently, Line 3 and Line 5 fossil fuel pipelines resistance and the Stop Cop City movement in Atlanta. Sarah is committed to collective liberation and non-coercive forms of collective action and has worked to support movements from coast to coast accordingly. Sarah is an engaging trainer and has practical and effective relationship to consensus organizing, working to facilitate groups of friends, colleagues, or complete strangers through the process of coming together to make decisions their communities depend on. And before we move to the next thing, everyone go ahead and put in the chat your name, pronouns, organization or affiliations, and why you're here at this session, learning with us about consensus training. Take a few seconds to jot some of those things down.
I think I can, as people are checking in the chat, I think I can kind of continue with the slides. Welcome, Jennifer. Welcome, Bill. So for today's agenda, this is really a lot of information. So I have some resources after the fact that we can email to you. But for today's agenda, we're going to talk about some of the processes that make consensus decision making work. We're going to look at, I'm sorry, my eyes are bad. I'm sorry, could somebody, I am having a hard time reading this. I apologize.
No worries. You were on the second, what makes good facilitation and decision making process,
Thank you.
dealing with bad processes or struggling with facilitation, and then some resources and takeaways.
Yes, thank you very much. And then, in terms of participating, these types of workshops work best when we're talking to each other and participating, which is kind of difficult in a virtual setting. And so just to make this like more of a flow and to encourage a back and forth, if folks could mute yourself when you're not talking, just so there's not background noise and so we can hear each other. There is going to be a slide deck. So if folks want to go off camera while we're kind of going through the slide deck, no problem, but there is also going to be parts where we're going to be like raising questions and discussing concepts. And so if folks feel comfortable coming off camera so that we can just talk to each other more easily, that would be great. No pressure. And then, you know, if you are going to go off camera and step away, just let us know. And then feel free to use the chat function. Ayana is going to be watching the chat. And so that's a great way, you know, to ask questions, ask for a pause if you need it, you know, affirm something that you're hearing that you like. And then also the reactions, you should feel free to use the reactions freely. So to start off here, and just to kind of like practice getting in the mix and actually actively participating in this, we're going to do a little poll. It should pop up on your screen. And it's a very simple poll just to get a sense of what experiences people in the room have had. And the questions are, have you participated in these different democratic decision-making models, whether that is voting in an electoral campaign, just an informal vote, majority rules vote, or consensus process? And give that a couple of minutes. And while people are voting, I will just let you know why I am very passionate about having good process, regardless of whether it is consensus or a different form of decision making. I really, when I started organizing in Seattle during the World Trade Organization protests in 2000, I started off in 3 hour meetings with people sobbing, you know, and stuck with it. And since then have been in probably tens of thousands of meetings. And so I just know how, and I really believe that our power comes in our ability to move together. And so having good meetings, good meeting process is the like the invisible structure that creates everything that's on the inside. That's been my experience. And so, you know, through my own frustrations with bad meetings, is how I started taking trainings and then, you know, using the tools and being like, wow, this really is effective, and then sharing those tools. So I feel very honored to be here with you guys today to talk about this stuff. Where are we at with the poll? Have folks had a chance?
Yeah, we're pretty much there. Yes. We can end it. Share results so everyone should be able to see.
So it looks like not everybody has participated in all of the processes, but the majority have voted in like a government electoral process. The majority have engaged in some sort of majority rules vote, and less people have actually, it looks like 63% have actually used consensus process. So for the folks who said that they have used consensus process, could I get a volunteer to just talk a little bit about what was the, you know, an example of a situation where you used consensus process, and what was the process that you used? And I can't call on people because the poll is anonymous, but 63% of the people said that they have actually used consensus process. So don't be shy. I'm
I
not seeing any hands.
can speak up.
Okay,
Sorry.
thank you so much. No, I appreciate you. Thank
I
you.
couldn't unmute. So I went to a Quaker college, and we use consensus in a lot of decision making between the students and the faculty. And the way that looked was basically sitting in a big circle and discussing our different viewpoints and discussing the issue until we all agreed on how to proceed. So it was a long, pretty long, drawn out meeting. But everyone would leave feeling like they got what they needed from the process. And, you know, everyone supported the results.
That was a fantastic example. Thank you so much for coming off mute to share that. And that's a pretty high level of decision making if you're talking about at a collegiate level. You know, so I think that's also a very good example that you can use this for, you know, many different situations. Again, you know, there are some people here obviously with some deep experience in consensus, and then some people with less experience with consensus. And so this is not meant to go, this isn't going to be a deep dive into consensus process. This is really just the kind of like bird's eye view that folks can dig into offline. But in terms of, you did a great job of talking about like what the meeting process is like. So thank you. And then in terms of like, you know, just like a snapshot of consensus process, it's a process for adopting proposals. It's essentially a decision-making process, or it can be a decision-making process. It's important that people, if they're it, people are not happy with something, or if they have questions or concerns, that people take responsibility to voice those concerns. And then the idea is that the decision doesn't steamroll people, you know, that, that you keep on talking things through until people's concerns or questions are addressed. And then at a certain point, if there, consensus is also not a unanimous decision. People can choose to stand aside at a certain point for the good of the group if agreement can't be reached. So it does not assume that everybody will make a unanimous agreement. And then in terms of where it comes from, the tradition of consensus decision-making, at least in the North American activists, circle seems to go back originally to the Quakers, who in turn say they were inspired by Native American practices. Some civil rights and peace groups of the 50s and 60s used consensus decision-making, but much of the current interest emerged in the 70s largely in reaction to some of the more macho leadership styles typical in the 1960s New Left. So the feminist movement played a pretty critical role there. We can go into the next slide. So just briefly, I'm going to have some other folks. Would somebody be willing to read the slide of what consensus is?
I can.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Consensus is open, participatory, and democratic. Every voice counts. Values based in trust, cooperation, good and goodwill, flexible, deliberative, and offers groups the opportunity to continually revise proposals until the whole group agrees. And consensus is high quality decisions, and often takes the pressure off anyone from needing to know the solution to any given problem.
And then is there somebody who's willing to read what consensus isn't?
I'll do it. Can you hear me? Yeah, consensus is not silence. Declaring we have a consensus, putting your goals or personal political agenda before the groups. It's not a win-lose situation, and unanimous decision making. So,
thank okay. you. Yeah, so that's just kind of like to ground us in, you know, what consensus is and isn't, because sometimes people are just like, okay, we have consensus, and the word has a meaning of, you know, we agree here, but there's an actual process behind that. So if people are not actually using a decision-making process and saying they have consensus, I would argue that they do not have consensus. Okay, we're ready to move on to the next one. So in terms of what's wrong with, why don't we just vote, you know? And certainly any sort of democratic decision-making is better than undemocratic decision-making. But in terms of why consensus can be, have those more high quality, more buy-in, more participation, more power, more powerful decisions, is when you're doing like a majority rules model, there can be some negative behavioral patterns that emerge. It can be competitive. Voting is a win or lose model that pits one decision against the other rather than seeking to synthesize two into a mutually satisfying decision. It can be a very, as we see on our current political stage, very divisive and can become aggressive. A win-lose model has the potential to disrupt an entire group. It can be quantitative as opposed to qualitative. So voting is a quick and more mindless procedure that tends to work with the easiest solution rather than seeking to create the best or most sustainable agreement. It can be uncompromising. In majority rules, there's rarely room for compromise or amendments of an idea. An individual is forced to make a distinct, inflexible choice between two options. It's one or the other, support or oppose. And it can be impersonal. Voting doesn't take into account an individual's feelings or needs or desires. Majority rule tends to disassociate the decision from everyday life and the individual from the decision-making process. And it can also be disempowering. The individual is left to the tyranny of the majority and is left no empowering forum to address decisions that affect them. One's individual concerns, no matter how strong or relevant, can be completely disregarded. And so, especially in spaces where we are trying to really build real power, consensus can help us to cultivate that landscape to have more successful and more thriving participatory decision-making. We're ready for the next. So I'm going to start getting into the actual processes that go into consensus decision-making. In terms of before the meeting, so with anything meeting related, doing some prep work before the meeting goes a long way to creating a structure for a container for success. So ideally at the meeting before you end or before the next meeting, you want to choose who is going to be the facilitator or facilitators. For example, in this workshop, Ayana is helping me facilitate because she is fielding the chat. Jennifer is helping because she's moving the slide deck. So having like multiple people collaborating can take the weight off of one person so that person can focus. It also can be really helpful to rotate facilitators. The facilitator usually builds the agenda, and that is a lot of power. The facilitator also kind of shepherds the conversation. And so to build the skill set and also to make sure that power isn't being hoarded in one or two sets of hands, it can be really helpful to rotate facilitation. It also helps to keep people from burning out too. Before the meeting, you want to get the agenda ready and determine that the facilitator doesn't have to talk the whole time. You can have different people present different pieces depending on what those pieces are, whether it is an announcement, a decision, an action that needs to happen. So these are the kind of things that could help to structure your meeting for success. At the meeting, this is kind of just like a basic format to set your meeting up. It is helpful to start with some sort of check-in or sharing. When you have large groups, we weren't really sure how many people were going to be in this workshop, and we have a limited amount of time. But in a meeting, you want people to actually connect with each other. And so it is helpful to, you know, just share things that are going on, have a prompt question, and actually go around the room or the virtual room and just give people a chance to personally check in. You want to review the agenda, because the idea isn't that the agenda is set in stone and that the facilitator is the, you know, person who creates the agenda and everybody has to follow it. The idea is that we're all contributing to the agenda so that whatever issues that people are trying to get addressed, get addressed. You want to have different roles besides just the facilitator. You also want to have a note taker, which is critically important. You could also have a scribe who is taking notes. Sometimes I'm a very visual thinker, so it helps me to be able to both look up and see the agenda and also look up and see what we're talking about. A timekeeper to make sure that we're respecting everybody's time, and if an agenda item is going long, that it doesn't just consume your whole meeting. And then also, it can be helpful to have a vibes watcher, depending on how heated things are, because especially if there is conflict, helping to create a space where people can stay grounded as possible and know that we all have support to get our whatever we're trying to talk about addressed can really help to make a more functional and successful meeting. So I do like having vibe watchers. I know not everybody does that, but and then moving through the agenda, it can be useful to kind of figure out what are the things that you want to take the most time on, whether you want to put certain things at the front or the end of the agenda to just help with the flow. And then a really important thing that sometimes people forget is to set the next meeting and also do a meeting evaluation. Because you can get really useful feedback. In the materials you'll get via email after this workshop, there's some great suggestions of different, very simple meeting evals you can do that are very evocative of how you can finesse different little things to make your meetings a lot better. And then having a clear closing so that people know, okay, we're free to go now. So. And then the basic process, again, this is very simple, basic overview of consensus. So at the very beginning, you want to make sure that people understand the background, have some discussion, and pull whatever little details you need from individuals to inform making a proposal. Before you can make a decision, you have to have a clear proposal in front of you. So that's the second step, is somebody makes a proposal. You know, after you've had the discussion, developed, you can either develop a proposal or somebody can just make the proposal. And as much as possible, the clearer you can make the proposal, the smoother the process will be. After the proposal is made, there's clarifying questions, concerns, and discussion. So this is the part where, you know, people are like, is it Tuesday or Wednesday? Or, you know, very simple clarifying questions that maybe the proposal didn't address. And then somebody might have a concern like, there's a parade that day, so maybe this date is not going to work for our event. Or, you know, people can bring in information. And so once you are hearing the questions, hearing the concerns, you can, the idea is that either the facilitator or the person who's making the proposal can restate the proposal with those questions and concerns addressed. And then once you have a proposal that's been recrafted, friendly amendments, restated, then you can test and see if you have consensus. And the way you know whether you have consensus is you say, you know, are there any strong concerns. You want to know if people have them. So ask people what those concerns are. And if you can't address those concerns, you ask if the next thing is to ask if people will stand aside. This is not a coercive process. This is just like, I don't like this, but I'm not going to stop somebody from doing it. You haven't addressed my concerns, but I'm for the good of the group, I'm willing to allow this to go forward. And then if somebody says I block, that is essentially like a veto. If somebody blocks in consensus process, it means that they have a strong moral or a very strong objection to the proposal, and that they not only will they not participate in it, they do not think anybody should participate in it. I have never blocked a proposal. Some people never block a proposal in their life. This is something that can be abused depending on like who is in the room. And I have definitely seen blocks used in ways that I found unprincipled. So for me, this is one of the, it's like one of those very tricky pieces that is both very important, but also can be abused, in my opinion. And then if you go through the whole process, which just to restate is somebody makes a proposal, asks for clarifying questions, asks for concerns, tries to address those questions and concerns, and then restate the proposal, ask for strong objections or concerns, stand asides or blocks. And if you don't have stand asides or blocks, then you have consensus. So you've gone through this whole process of like getting to a consensus decision, but then you don't want to forget about implementation. So that is the last piece in terms of the consensus process, is just making sure that, you know, who is going to be doing the thing when, make sure it gets recorded in the notes, maybe restate the overall decision for the note taker. So that is the consensus process in a nutshell. So let's take a minute here too. That was quite a lot, and I'm sorry that went really fast, but could we take the slide down? And I can't get everybody on my screen, I don't think, but do people have any questions or thoughts at this point?
I see a comment in the chat.
Oh, thank you. So it's a listening process. It is definitely a very deep listening process, but it is also a decision-making process. You're listening for what people's questions or concerns are, and attempting to address them so that when a decision is made, people all want to support that decision. You know, whatever the different tasks that are needed to complete the decision, people feel invested in making that happen because they were also part of making that decision. Yeah, I see a hand. Dee Dee and Henry.
Yeah, I was just going to say that two things. One is I think there are a lot of variations on consensus. And one form that I've seen has very particular questions that go around that try to like get people to a certain point before you're even starting to think about strategies. The other thing is that I think when it's done well, you know, which means not just a facilitator, but that the group is doing it well, that one often can get beyond synthesis to something that is like a new idea that didn't even exist before the conversation happened, which is to me is like ideal. You know, it's not necessarily a synthesis and it's not necessarily a compromise. It's like, oh, now that I understand exactly what you meant and now you understand what I meant, we realize like we're not even asking the right question yet. Like we could go way beyond. So.
Yeah, I appreciate that comment and I totally agree. Henry?
Well, I would just add something while we're here trying to fertilize our local consensus process, just the piece about the block. Like you said, it has to be a major moral objection. And the person making a block, it's such an exercise of unilateral authority that they should be, they would definitely leave the group if it moved forward. Now, if you're angry, if you're certain that you really don't like it, and don't, you know, et cetera, that's an opportunity to stand aside when you're the only person in the group who's really doesn't like it. A block, like Sarah said, is just, it's, you never see it. There are people, the only place I would see it consistently was in New York City, where there are all these strong personalities who would really like railroad groups and stuff. And it just, it really messed up the process and the ability to have a cohesive group and work moving forward.
One other thought also, which is that I've seen, you know, I participated in a 2.5 year process at Genwith there for a lot of that was supposedly being done based on consensus, and there were never ground rules laid out. No one ever explained what the consensus process was or how we were actually making decisions. It was more like the facilitator at the end of a meeting, which was just sort of a meeting, would say, well, here's what I'm, you know, feeling. You know, it seems like most of you agree with that. Is that right? You know, it's like, it's so not, it didn't have any of the really positive qualities of consensus. And yeah, maybe, you know, at times it was, he was picking up on the right thing, but it didn't bring in any of the like deep listening or goal rounds or that kind of thing. So a lot of people use, and that, you know, and that person works for something that has the word consensus in the title. And so it's like, people just assume, well, if you're a consensus facilitator, then we must be doing consensus, right? So.
You know, I have also encountered that where people are kind of bandying about the term, and I see your hand up next, the term consensus. I actually think that's a very common problem, and that's part of the next part of the workshop. So thank you for raising that, Didi, because I really do think that happens quite a lot. And it is important to be able to interrupt that and support better process. I'm sorry, I don't want to say your name wrong.
It's Jael.
Jael,
yeah. So one experience I've had, because it is such a long process and the meetings can go on quite a while, that and people start to get frustrated with the amount of time that certain people are talking or something. And then, I mean, for myself, I sometimes just feel like I want to speak up, but I don't. Because, and maybe it is like what Didi was saying, was just poor facilitation. But I think it's so important that the facilitator really helps those who are not speaking up have an opportunity to speak, and others who are kind of dominating the conversation to step back a little bit. But that's kind of some of the issues I've seen with the process, is those people who like to talk a lot take up a lot of the time.
Yeah, definitely. And in some of the materials that I'm going to send you, I am currently just focusing primarily on consensus process, but facilitation is its own whole world. And in terms of consensus facilitation, that's one of the trickiest things, is how do you create a space where everybody's voice really is heard, where you're really drawing the best of everybody into the room. And that is the sign of a really skilled facilitator, and, you know, somebody who is really paying attention to everyone and making sure that people are participating, and if they, you know, if they feel, if they want to, if they feel comfortable. So Jennifer?
I wonder about, so in the first kind of bubble that you shared, just the discussion, bringing out a diversity of ideas and the concerns and possible solutions, everything like pre-proposal. If you have any, I don't know, thoughts or advice, because there are a lot of processes around the state here that like want to use, you know, we kind of group agree to use consensus. how do you even get to the point of a proposal if it's some, if it's a really broader, longer form conversation that's going to take place over like many, many meetings? And it's not just like, we're going to decide on, you know, where we're going to host this event, but it's more like talking about policy. Do you have any thoughts on that or examples or thinking around, like, even if it's on from the facilitator perspective, but like having deep conversations that then are, you know, inform what type of policy we're going to eventually try to build and advocate for?
I definitely can send you a wealth of resources on different facilitate. They are facilitator tools for drawing those kind of conversations out. I touched on a couple in the next couple slides, but there, I can also add some other additional resources to what I sent you guys, because they're, again, this is, it speaks to the importance of creating the agenda and who is facilitating, because crafting an agenda that allows for space and time to have those conversations is the first step. And then what are the exercises that you're using to create an environment that allows for that deeper discussion when people maybe are bringing different priorities and different allegiances. I really do think having a clear set of agreements of like when we run into roadblocks or, you know, when people raise questions or concerns, this is how we handle it. Because I think, especially in my experience, so I have been working to raise the minimum wage in Michigan for the last 5 years and brought a lawsuit, you know, with many other people to, which recently went before the Michigan Supreme Court around raising the minimum wage. And it took so many meetings, you know, to even just craft the policy language. And so I understand that it can be very tricky, you know, depending on who's at the table, and that there can be a lot of, at least in my experience, there were definitely people who were trying to like steamroll the process, and we weren't even trying to use consensus process. So I could see where having, you know, both people who have like a limited understanding of what consensus process is, and maybe, you know, depending on where people's priorities are, having a hard time drawing out a diversity of perspectives. Sorry, go ahead, Jen.
Yeah, and like to clarify though, then if you're, you know, using consensus process, you're doing it if every meeting, right? It's not like only when we're going to make a decision or only at the end of the meeting we're like, oh, does everyone agree and do this. It's like from start to finish of every meeting. That's kind of what I'm hearing.
Correct. You would want to have like each agenda set up in such a way where if decisions are being made or if positions are being taken, there someone makes a proposal for what that is, and then you have a discussion about it. So you wouldn't be moving, you would, I think the hardest part is just getting people to make clear proposals. And again, I the thing that you are raising or what I'm hearing you raise are questions of structure. Because if you're just having a conversation and there is no process to make decisions except for like a thumbs up at the end, that's not good process. And so you would need to have a more structured, clear decision-making process to make, is this where we're at? You know, is this piece of the legislation what we all feel good about? You know, you would go through the consensus process, which involves asking questions, raising concerns, and addressing those questions and concerns. Henry, you look like you want to say something. You're like sat up.
Well, I was looking for the hand button. Yeah, I've just been in a lot of circumstances where like powerful nonprofits or community leaders or government officials are convening a bunch of people so that they can say that those people were part of the process. They're meeting with people so they can tell a funder or their constituents or something that this is coming from these important people or from some broad cross-section of people. And it's just important that all of us like don't allow ourselves to get exploited like that. I think that, you know, this, all of these processes that you're sharing with us are really good to be used, even if the final decision-making authority is just majority rules, you know? And this is about respecting people at the table and at least giving voice to consensus and then making a delineation of where the power actually is or isn't. So anyway, I'm just saying that, you know, we've got the highest percentage of nonprofits in the country here in Vermont per capita. And, you know, a lot of people are trying to justify their budgets and they're working hard, but we shouldn't let ourselves get exploited by their agenda.
Yeah, it's tricky when you don't control the facilitation, creating the agenda, you know, some of those more structural pieces. But maybe we can actually start going on to go back to the slide deck, because this is actually what this next piece kind of starts to delve into. So thanks, everybody. I really appreciate everybody's participation in that and just thoughts. It's helpful to kind of hear, you know, some of what folks are talking about and thinking about just in your own local organizing. And it is really a very common struggle, both like if there is conflict in the room, so this is where I'll start, and then also in terms of the facilitation. One of the things that I really like about consensus process is that conflict is not a problem. It's not something to avoid or lean away from. It's something to address. So in terms of if you are both either the facilitator or just an active participant, we should always be looking for nonverbal signs of dissent and trying to address those things. And some different things in terms of like, if the group is having a hard time coming to some sort of agreement, some different techniques. One is you can put flip charts up on the wall, and each flip chart has a pro or a con statement, and then people get to write their ideas on those flip charts. It's supposed to be very simple, and people only spend a minute at each chart writing their positions and then reading that off. And that can kind of like help clarify where people are at in terms of why they are for or against something, what they think the strengths and weaknesses are. So that could be something that would take, you know, 15 or 20 minutes on an agenda and could help to kind of just like loosen up the dynamic in the room, get people thinking more creatively. Another thing is active listening. If there are specifically a couple people who are having conflict with each other, asking them to reflect what the other person's position is and continue reflecting it until the other person agrees that they understand what their position is. Sometimes people are aren't even arguing about what they think they are arguing about. And when somebody has to say, oh, this is what you're saying, to the other person's satisfaction, then it helps them to be like, oh, that's not what I thought you were saying, you know? So it helps to kind of just like clarify between individuals. And a fishbowl is another technique, facilitation technique that folks may or may not have used or seen. But essentially, if there are a couple positions in the room, instead of having like a large group conversation that takes a lot longer, you can just take two or three or four, however many positions there seem to be, set those people in the middle, and then those people have a conversation essentially observed by the larger group. So you're still using the same like facilitation, you know, making sure everybody's getting a chance to talk, but that can also kind of like clarify for the group, you know, where people are coming from. And it's not supposed to be a debate. It's really supposed to be the listening to people, trying to hear what people's questions are and concerns are, where people are people's pain points are. Okay. Next. So sometimes it is not necessarily the issue, it is the facilitation. Not everybody is equally good at facilitating. I really appreciated the point that Didi was making about facilitators who are trying to draw out minority opinions, or you know, people who are quieter or tend to like not assert themselves as loudly. So some things, you know, I would encourage people to do if you are using consensus process is to make a point of process. And so I am used to doing this in like large groups of like 50 to 100 people. So people frequently use hand signs, but it is essentially this, you can say this is like a technical point, or like this, a little triangle with your hands, that's a point of process. And the facilitator at that point is supposed to, if there's a conversation going on, or, you know, if there's a stack of people waiting to speak, the facilitator is supposed to jump that and go to the person who's trying to make a process point. So by making a process point, you can say, hey, it seems like we're getting off the agenda, or, hey, we said we were going to only take 10 minutes on this and it's been 20 minutes, or, hey, it seems like this has gotten into a back and forth between two people. You know, maybe we need to open it up a little bit. So that is a useful, if you are in a place where you're able to make group agreements before the meeting, specifically lining out that you'd like people to be able to make points of process. It also can take some of the stress off the facilitator. I love it when people make points of process as a facilitator, because I want to have good process. So it can be useful for people to just like make a point of process if it seems like the agenda is going off the rails or the facilitator is floundering. You can just make a friendly point of process to like help get things back on track. I don't know if folks have ever heard the term guerrilla facilitation, but essentially, again, when the facilitator is really having a hard time, it can be useful to bring the agenda back if it's strayed. All these things that I just said, you know, just reminding how much time is on the agenda for things, and summarizing for the group. Sometimes it can be useful to just restate, this is a good facilitation tool, is to just restate what people have said and where there is agreement, and confirm that with people. Is this what you guys are saying? It seems like this maybe is coming close to some sort of agreement. And that shows that there's progress and possibilities. So, ready to move on. Okay, so I think we can come back to the group at this point. So I'm curious, in terms of the experience in the room with the current organizing work that you're doing, are there meetings where you all are using consensus process currently, like in the way that we've lined out here? There are meetings. Henry is giving a thumbs up. Would you mind giving an example of a meeting where you guys are currently using consensus process?
There's there's a group called Regeneration Court, which is kind of started as a coalition group, and now it's its own nonprofit, and we make all our decisions by consensus and proposal.
Jennifer, did you come up?
Coalition consensus, child.
Say that again.
Isn't the Vermont Healthy Soils Coalition consensus?
Yeah, but we haven't really been making decisions. I don't know. yeah, we use that process as well when there is a decision to make. I mean, town meetings are sort of, I mean, even though everyone then goes to vote, but in Vermont, a lot of the small towns have town meeting where everyone can get up and speak about why they support a certain ordinance or resolution or why they're against it. It's similar.
Interesting.
I've alluded to this before. I'm in several that are like formally state that they use consensus, but I would say that we're not doing any of what you outlined today.
So do you guys mind if we dig into that a little bit? We have a little bit of time. And I'm kind of curious to hear from folks in spaces where folks are saying we're using consensus process, but it does not, there is not a clearly laid out, written down process for making decisions. Can folks think of ways either individually or collectively to try to dig into that a little bit? Like, do you think that there is some flexibility to bring more formal process to the table?
Well, I could say that that in the example that I gave, I know I and probably various others spoke up like at least 3 or 4 times, bringing this point up and saying, could you explain like what you even mean by consensus, or what is, how do we actually make decisions, and can you give us something written? And it was just, you know, they would give a very kind of loosey-goosey version of it, and we would ask for something more, and it just didn't happen over and over again.
Do you think it would be possible for you guys to propose a process?
I mean, that particular thing has ended.
I see.
I think we could have, but like they were being paid to facilitate because they, you know, were part of the group that practices consensus, and they had an intern there, and you know, so it's like clearly they felt strongly that they had a process, but it was never transparent in a way that we could understand.
Mm.
And perfectly nice people. Like they were like very open to something happening, but it was kind of like sometimes that in and of itself is literally disarming, you know, like you're bringing, mm-hmm. they're so nice in their response to it that it doesn't, it's like there's nothing push against. So I probably if we had laid out something that would have brought it to the table more strongly. There were a lot of other things going on at the same time. So it was kind of like, which fight are we fighting?
Gotcha.
It was, I think mostly I experienced it as very confusing because I myself kept thinking, well, their organization is called this. They do this work all over the place. Like, clearly there's something there that we're just not hearing or that hasn't been stated. And maybe there was, like, I can't imagine that they don't have like a process, but it was just extremely not transparent.
Well, I wonder, so that's an interesting like learning opportunity though, in terms of, you know, maybe people who are well-meaning, but who, you know, and who could potentially be allies, but who are not necessarily working in a way that creates the type of container that is going to be the most effective at having a real consensus process or a participatory, like hyper-democratic process. Could you imagine a situation where you might find yourself
in this kind of predicament again with this work.
Yeah, definitely. And I think part of my issue was that the consensus process I know is pretty different from what you just laid out. And I think they serve really different purposes. So the one that I knew, I don't think would have been accepted necessarily by the group or that particular person. Whereas I think like what you just laid out would have been a very good clarification, substitution, whatever, for what they were doing, because it's kind of like, it sounds like what they should have been doing. You know what I mean? Like it would have been totally appropriate for that group. So,
gotcha. Diane?
Yeah, I don't know if you have examples for the meeting agreements, because I think those are so important. So when we would have meetings at my school, we didn't really even have a facilitator. We just had group agreements and about like how much time you can take and how you know that you can't start speaking until someone else is finished. And so those would be laid out at the beginning and we had a note taker. But then, you know, and one example is we were helping create the curriculum for the next semester. The students were involved with the staff. And so we met for 3 days to come up with that. And it was a long process, but there wasn't really a facilitator. And I think what happens is sometimes if a certain group is facilitating, they hold all the power, it feels like. And so those group agreements are important, I think, in the beginning to have. So I'm just wondering if you have examples of those.
Yeah, I also agree that group agreements are very important. I think like anything, they can be weaponized and gamed depending on who the facilitator is. So I do think that having like the willingness and ability to guerrilla facilitate, you know, like when people are abusing process is really important, like having people get your back in meetings. But yeah, there are some, I think it depends on what you're going for and who the participants in the meeting are. But in terms of like, if you are in a space where people have different political agendas, I would say the technical pieces of how meetings run are very helpful, you know, and because the pieces of like assume best intentions, or, you know, like things where it's like, we're all here for the same reason and like nobody is here with like their own like personal goals that they're trying to like get through so they can check the box and like put everybody's names on the report or whatever. I think looking at those things very carefully so that the meeting agreements are, like you're saying, the guardrails, you know. And I've also had that experience too, where, you know, when you have good group agreements that people really participate in making and that are clear and make sense and can't be unequally enforced isn't the right word, but, you know, moderated. That's been my experience, is that it can make a meeting like just so much more effortless, and bad meeting agreements can be abused in my experience. So I do think like the facilitator and the meeting agreements and the agenda are those structural pieces that people don't see as much, but that are the, you know, that is what the table is laid on.
Yeah, I would love to hear your differences that you saw, Didi, but also it would be great to see those, like any examples that you would share, Sarah, because I think the idea of like forming group agreements in the beginning of a process. I don't know. I've only seen it happen where there's sort of already like a template and no one wants to say like, no, I don't want to assume best intent, but we just sort of accept them all. And there's not really any kind of discussion and there's not really like a group engagement around what are these things even mean? And I haven't seen group agreements that are as practical as what Jael shared. Which is like, don't talk until the person's done talking, or maybe set a time limit on how long someone can talk, or stuff like that. So it'd be great to start to sort of pull together other types of agreements that have worked for people.
Didi, did you want to respond about the different processes?
Sure.
This is definitely like the simplest and most streamlined consensus process that I'm presenting here.
Yeah. So the one that I'm more familiar with is Bob Chadwick's consensus process, or Robert Chadwick. He has a book called I'll remember the name in a minute, but there's a very short version of his book on the Soil Carbon Coalition called Beyond Conflict to Consensus. Or it's a short version of his method before he wrote the book, like 20 pages or something. Jen, it's sort of what we used, that we didn't really get all the way through it, but it's what we used at a meeting recently. And it's often used when there is a lot of conflict in the room, especially if it's conflict that hasn't really been aired. It is a go around circle, like with a talking stick or something, can be timed, but generally best if you have like multiple days to hash something out. People are gathering, willing to gather for 2 or 3 days. It's been used a lot in land related issues. So like the spotted owl and the loggers, or, things around water in the West. And that's actually where Bob Chadwick developed it, was in those kinds of circumstances. And the basic set of questions, the first go around is, how do you see the current situation, or what do you think, what's the current situation and how do you feel about it, or some version of that? The second question is, what's the worst possible outcome of resolving this or of not resolving it? And it's really interesting if you put people into two groups and one works on one and one works on the other, and the worst possible outcomes are almost always the same. So, and the reason you ask that question right pretty much up front is that before you ask it before the next round, which is what's the best possible outcome. And if you don't ask that worst possible outcome first, then most people's best possible outcome is a sort of passive aggressive, unconscious flip of their worst possible outcome, because it's never been stated. So they say, well, we won't kill each other, or whatever. But by stating the worst possible outcomes, which often brings up a lot of tears and emotion, it helps people see each other as human and vulnerable, but it also gets that out of the way so that when the best possible outcomes are stated, they're relatively clean and actually forward thinking rather than just not that, and then the next two rounds are, what are the beliefs and behaviors that are most likely to lead to the best possible outcome, which helps people really start to take responsibility for their own part in creating it. And then only after you've done all of that do you get to what are the strategies and actions most likely to lead to it. So you can see it can be very tedious in some ways, but it's very powerful. And there are some very specific things, like there is a scribe, but the scribe is actually tasked with writing down the exact words. It's not the kind of like like I'm paraphrasing. There's no paraphrasing. It's like, no, actually I'm using these words because these are the words that I need to use. And so sometimes they may shorten it with the person's permission, but it has to be like in the words that the person is like talking to the scribe and saying, no, can you change that word to such and such?
It sounds like the first bubble in the arc of like the pre-proposal, except for like a wildly comprehensive and thorough.
We're dealing with a tree frog and a dog here. So in case you're hearing funny noises in the background. So I missed part of what you were presented there because I had to take the dog out. But I'll look back over the slides. What are we looking at right now?
This is the discuss and bring out the diversity of ideas and perspectives.
Yeah.
I do appreciate you bringing that up though, and also Jennifer's question, because you really can create your own process. Mm-hmm. You know, like through this work that you're doing, you can find what works the best for your group or for you guys and craft that, build that process that works the best for you with your own tools, you know, your own toolkit. So I do think it's worth looking at, you know, these more like deeper, much what Didi is talking about is transformative work.
And it's actually, I'm remembering the name of the book. It's called Finding New Ground, which sort of alludes to the first comment I made, that it often is something that's more than just a compromise when you really do that deep listening. And like I said, when it's done properly, there is no time limit on any speaker. And some speakers will talk for an hour and a half. And Bob always said, like, you know, that may be the first time in their life that that person felt fully heard. And it's really important to, and generally that person won't feel the need to dominate the meeting after having had that long, long, long monologue. It's a very, very unusual process for our particular society, you know, so.
Thank you for that. Any other thoughts or comments in terms of the local context of Vermont and consensus process? And what you guys would like to see? I'm curious, you know, in your ideal world, how would you like to see consensus being used or even other processes? Do you feel like maybe what do folks think in terms of the practicality of consensus in your organizing work? Obviously, you know, when we are around people, it can be any kind of group decision making can be challenging, even when we're around people with shared values and like minds. And then when you try to, you know, include people with more diverse backgrounds and opinions and positions, that can also, you know, make it a heavier lift. And I'm curious how you guys conceive of using consensus in your organizing work. Like outside of like comfortable places, in uncomfortable places. That can also be just something to mull on.
Well, I co-chair Ag and Ecosystem Subcommittee for our Climate Council. And we have kind of our first meeting next week. And I'm trying to think, because so far it's just been like state employees basically telling everyone what to do, it feels like. So how I can bring this into decision making and like really include everyone on the committee. And then I'm also thinking about how we could use it in like our farm teams. There isn't really conflict to work through so much, but like how we can help the farmers even figure out what they need, you know, maybe use the consensus process to help them figure out their priorities.
Yeah, I really feel like consensus can be very, for me, it taught me how to make good decisions, you know, just of like making room for people to ask questions and it's not a threat. Having space for people to raise concerns, I'm not attacking you, you know, like it's so opposite of how we're raised in this culture that I really do think that the process itself is a very good process. I think, you know, some of the technical aspects of blocking and, you know, the heavier lifts can be challenging in large groups, but I could see it really being fun for the farmers that you're talking about. Jennifer, you came off mute. I thought maybe you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I'm thinking about using it with our board, who are like an elected group of officials for our conservation district, in crafting, I guess, you know, our sort of our beliefs and the stances, and you know what we want to put out there to the public. I think this is exactly the type of process we're going to have to undertake to actually put out statements that we're fully behind. So I'm excited about that. I think that's a more comfortable group where we can use this and have some really fruitful conversation that results in like, and now we can put out a statement. At the end of the day, it's not just like a conversation and then we walk away and nothing really happens. So I'm excited to use that for that purpose.
Yeah, I wonder what you, Jen, and other conservation district folks think, you know, with the farm teams, if we're going to be training a cohort of technical service providers, and part of what we're training them in is consensus, it's not a, so Sarah, the farm teams that these guys put together are folks from different state agencies, maybe different service providers for a farmer, and they all get together so that all the different hands know what all the different hands are doing and craft a unified plan. So it's not appropriate that somebody from a state agency is going to consent to the farmer's plan on their property, but having a process where there's a proposal and everybody gets to help clarify it and help come up with concerns can help make a more cogent plan. And maybe this is what we're going to be training our technical service providers in doing, is to help use this process to facilitate those farm teams, even though the final step of consensus isn't, you know, appropriate. It still seems like a good process.
Yeah, and you, it sounds like you have some very deep knowledge in the room, in your community, and I would encourage you to consider a modified consensus process, because I do really think that the issue of blocking can be very a difficult obstacle sometimes when people are just learning consensus process. That's just my editorialized position, and I'm not there doing the work, so, you know.
Would you give us a quick context of like the sort of environment that it's more appropriate to be using modified consensus and what it is?
So, you know, just as I was saying to Jennifer, this is not the law. These are human technologies that people have co-created for decades, if not centuries. And so we can change them. We do not have to follow particular rules, and we can, you know, that's the whole point, is we can make processes that work for us based on our specific context, by agreement, you know, by making those decisions together. And so in situations where, you know, people blocking, I think, is really important when people's freedom or livelihood or safety is at risk. You know, for example, I was going to go drop a banner off a crane or something like that. That might be, you know, and people were taking physical risks with their life and liberty. That might be a situation where you would want to have a blocking vote, you know, because the stakes are very high. And so it is important for people to be able to say, no, I don't think the group should go forward at all. And I'm going to leave if we go forward with this. Where when the stakes are a little bit lower, I think having a process, you know, using that exact same process for making a clear proposal, making room for questions, concerns, addressing those, restating, make sure everyone's really clear, and then letting people stand aside. But I personally find the block can be a place where the process breaks down, and it can, you know, it can also, you know, in those conflicts, there can be very, like, very rich outcomes when, if people are willing to sit in that discomfort and work through that with each other. But if people are not as invested in each other, or not as invested in the goals, I think it can, what I have seen is that people can become disillusioned and disaffected, and then kind of like disassociate. So I think that is the danger with, or, you know, I wouldn't call it a danger, I'd call it a challenge with like very hard kind of pure consensus process where blocks are in there. And I think you can modify it to like supermajority. You know, you could say if we have, you know, consensus minus one or something like that. Those are some ways you can finesse it just to make it a little bit smoother of a process, in my opinion. But also I'm curious, because I know there are other people here with a lot of experience. Do folks have other thoughts or ideas in terms of modified consensus process or modifying consensus process, customizing it?
For pragmatism, I would throw in that I've seen a lot of folks try to go for 100% consensus, but have it built in that they can fall back to a 75% supermajority, or maybe your group wants at least 80% supermajority. So there's still a lot of enthusiasm and consent, and of course, but without the blocking. That would be the kind of thing that I would advocate for in our community work where appropriate.
Thanks for that. I think that's an excellent suggestion. And we are actually coming close to the end of our time here. I put some resources together, which I will email to you. I don't know if we want to pop up on that last slide. But I have a checklist for consensus process and facilitation. I have a consensus process tips sheet for you, shared paths, shared goals, hints for facilitators, 14 competencies of a facilitator, and a guide to conflict resolution. That guide to conflict resolution actually has a lot of those tools that you were asking for, Jen. So I will send these to you after this workshop, and you can get them via email. My email is up there if anybody would like to contact me directly. And also, oh, thank you guys so much. Since there is a small group of us, would folks mind if we just go, I'll just call on people in order in my screen. And would folks mind just sharing one thing that either you learned from this or that was a highlight for you in terms of this workshop? Is that okay? Oh, we just lost one. Somebody was like voted with their feet. Jael, you're the first person on my screen. Would you mind?
Sorry, can you repeat? I was trying to copy the
Bill. The Bill had his hand up, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Bill, do you want to go first, Bill?
Yeah, I'm a listener, so I've been quiet and I enjoyed all of this. I really appreciate everybody's comments and suggestions and everything. And I've always thought, you know, it takes time, but one must be respected as a leader in a situation where you're conducting meetings and facilitating whatever you want to call it. I've done a lot of regional planning commission chairmanship for over many years, and And it takes time. People need to trust you. And once you gain that trust, then you listen, and then you become, trusted. And so people open up to you, and you can start to get places that more new invites into a new commissioners or whatever you might be don't have. And you have to be patient. You know, I'm a farmer, and I've learned that through farming, that one must be patient, and one must realize that tomorrow will be another day, and that, you know, you're going to find out a way to get through all of this. And so I think trust is something that you need, but it takes time. And I've always enjoyed, you know, coming to consensus with people and just listening to try to understand. I don't like to have an opinion personally, because a chairperson really doesn't need an opinion. A facilitator shouldn't have an opinion. They should be very open-minded. They should be able to ask questions. They should be super communicators. And to be able to get through not just the issues at hand, but other things, you know, how's your family, that kind of stuff. And that gets people warmed up to you, and they start to trust you, because they just want to. People want to trust you. And if you can get through that, break that barrier, then you're going to get places fast. And they're going to call you and ask your opinion or whatever it might be. And so there you go. Then you'll be a facilitator. I suppose that's what you'd be.
You just summarized the 14 competencies of a facilitator in that like short bite. So thank you very much, Bill. I totally agree with everything you just said.
Thank you.
I wanted to say quickly, I put all of those links from Sarah in the chat. So while folks are going around, you can copy those into wherever you're going to keep them.
And I'll also email everyone who signed up for this. And I'll put it in the link when we post this video as well. I'll put it in the description.
Thank you, Jennifer. Jayla, do you want to go next?
So what was the prom question again? I'm sorry.
Something, a takeaway, something you learned, something that was a highlight for you.
Yeah, it was different. It was good to see it laid out differently, and just from my own experience, and also to hear Dee Dee's explanation and everyone's experience and feedback. And I definitely have lots more ideas about how to facilitate meetings.
Yeah, I think that should be your next workshop that you guys do as a facilitation workshop. But Jennifer, would you like to go next?
Sure. My big takeaway was the different options for conflict resolution that you shared, the active listening where the other person reflects what they think you're saying until it actually, they fully understand. And even the flip chart and the fishbowl technique, I think, and just the fact that like, we shouldn't avoid conflict, but we should really dig in, and that's like the trigger for us to go deeper. I guess it's sort of a New England thing where like a little Puritan-esque, and people really want to like put blinders on when there's conflict. But it's going to bubble over if we don't talk about it. So it was great to have some like kind of fun activities. Like it seems like that would be a fun way to even have conversations in general. So I like it.
Yeah. And like Bill was talking about in terms of facilitation, it shows that the facilitator is like a good leader, you know, when you're creating these different opportunities and kind of breaking up the flow so that folks can think more creatively. So Henry and Dee Dee.
Well, it was useful to me to see it actually laid out what, you know, like, the bones of what consensus is in terms of your understanding of it. And I think I actually learned it when I was like in high school, but I haven't learned it since then. It's been a while. Let's see, there was one other thing I was going to say. Oh, I was going to just say, just for the group, that the Thetford Hill Church has been hosting workshops on a form of active listening that I went to a day-long one with them that was very powerful, where they brought two people with very different opinions into an active listening situation. And it was fascinating where it went in terms of them understanding each other. And they were looking for like the most highly charged thing we could find in the room. You know, so they were definitely not afraid of conflict. I'm forgetting the name of that particular facilitator, but that's something that's in our district. So we might try attending some of those.
I've been excited for this workshop and just, you know, wanted to hear it and see if I still felt like this is a good model, where the model itself has like good utility and mobility, where it can get out into people's minds and practices. And I think that, yes, it definitely can. And thanks for the slides. I think we're going to be just plagiarizing you to bits and doing this workshop in person. And I also like, I'm also impressed when facilitators actually use the like the bag of tricks. You know, when people are like, do the fishbowl or even the spectrogram or like some sort of like more dynamic, different kind of conversation, it mixes things up and like re-engages people. And so, yeah, maybe I would like to actually do that stuff, but also emphasize it in the training. But yeah, I think that this is exactly what we were looking for. We really just want to help people be able to get together and get moving on whatever their purposes are. So I think this is really what we're looking for. Thank you.
Awesome. Bye, Bill.
Hi there. I just wanted to say one thing. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Good. You know, I've always felt that when you run into somebody in a meeting that is really against everything, you let them speak. You know, you make sure that they feel comfortable about speaking. Of course, they're probably ready to rant, which is basically what they want to do. But at the end of it, you basically stop and you say, well, I really appreciate that. I really thank you for that, because it's really helped me understand a lot more about what you're coming from. And that's a huge stopping point for them. What can they say? They can't rant anymore. They just say, oh, I've been heard. And that's what people want. They just want to be heard. And that's very, very important when you come down to consensus. I've been heard. And, you know, you have to control some people, of course, because they just don't want to stop being heard. But and that's easy to do. You just say thank you, and we're going to move on here. So you've made yourself very clear, and we appreciate it. So that's basically my take on some of those issues where that it's not that pleasant to deal with, but you do.
I'm sure you're an excellent facilitator.
I try to be. I don't know.
Hi, Anna.
Yeah, I was also struck by some of those tactics like fishbowl, like recognizing them being used as like teaching tools in different courses and things like that, where drawing out voices where there may not be conflict or conflict hasn't been identified, because the finer tuned perspectives haven't been elicited. Just like seeing those in different, like more pedagogical, like instances and stuff. And my own, interaction with them in those spaces. So that was cool to see them being used as tools here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and feel free to bring in more tools, and Isabella?
Well, I'm not really involved in organizing or anything like at this moment in my life yet, but I'd love to be involved. And I really enjoyed this method of approaching it and reaching decisions, because I recently read the quote, the times are urgent, let us slow down, by what's his name? Bayo Okomolafe. And I thought that was really beautiful. And I do feel like such a sense of fear and urgency and, you know, we need to make decisions. We make them now, but by making them too hurriedly, and potentially leaving people out, well, that could just create more messes later. So I guess this seems like a really slow and not slow in a very good way, intentional, like inclusive way to come to action.
So that is a perfect way to end this. And I really appreciate those comments. I would love to organize with you. You sound like a very wise person. So I hope you stay in the mix. Ditto. All right. Well, thanks, guys. Thank you so much for taking this time. I really appreciate it. I am really inspired by just like the little snippets that I've heard from. I'm kind of jealous of all of you getting to hang out with each other and work together. So thanks for letting me dip in. I really appreciate you. And
thank you, Sarah.
Over, but thanks for taking the extra time.
Thank you.
This is perfect. Thank you all. Tune in next time.
Thank you.
Two see more weeks.
See you next
good
time.
Night. Peace.